This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back, 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 back again. Sadie's back, back, back. Tell a friend, friend, friend. Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, get back to the NBA postseason. Plus, which quarterbacks have the most to prove this year? And a 95-year-old is trying to help improve the NFL. Get to all that coming up throughout the hour. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. You can always get in touch with the show online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on our show page. Leave a comment for the show there. You can always get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays via the text line 843-608-1734 or give us a call 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. Hey, there's a blood drive going on tomorrow. Nope, Thursday at Cruise Chevy. This Thursday, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. on May 26th at Cruise Chevy. Save a life and give blood. Sign up today at redcrossblood.org and use the sponsor code CRUISE. Walk-ins are welcome, but they prefer appointments. And all donors will receive a complimentary certificate for an oil and filter change, tire rotation, and more. Cruise Chevy, blood drive going on this Thursday, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. And shout out Cruise, because not only of do they put on all these great blood drives with American Red Cross to help out people, but they're also helping me get to Greenville this week for the Citadel Baseball Tournament. So shout out to Cruise. They are always so helpful to us as well and others with all these blood drives. So head over there on Thursday, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., Cruise Chevy in North Charleston. Make an appointment today, in fact, at redcrossblood.org. And if you give blood, not only will you be helping others, but you'll also receive a complimentary certificate for an oil and filter change, tire rotation, and more this Thursday, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Before we get back to the NBA playoffs, we've been talking throughout the afternoon about our night with the Lumineers Saturday and a camp opening up for the Lumineers. Good show. I gave my my in-depth breakdown last hour. You can find it on demand. And then Trent shared a story during Trent's takes about having a conversation where the young girl in front of him, I don't know how young she was brought to tears by the song that the Lumineers were performing and was unhappy that her experience of her favorite song was being ruined by Trent having such a loud conversation telling everybody around him, no, Aaron Rodgers doesn't have to go to the OTAs. He's going to be just fine, or whatever you were talking about. Somebody reached out to the show. I think this is a good level-headed look at things. They said there's not really a certain kind of etiquette at a concert. However, there may be an etiquette on how we respond. And I think Trent is feeling guilty on how he responded.
Yes, 1,000%. 1,000%.
And then they finish, is looking for someone to tell him it's okay. You're looking for the affirmation that you weren't a jerk. But that's a fair point. So maybe you don't feel bad so much about talking at a concert. The girl in front was upset. Okay, that's fine. But you may be feeling more guilty about how you responded to
right.
her request or complaint.
Now, Luke, if I was, in a clear state of mind, if you will, I probably mm-hmm. would have taken the higher road. But, I mean, you can't give me an opportunity like that to nail a punchline. You know, I'm all about the jokes here. So, yeah, I just was asking a question. I forgot that I was at a live concert outside. I apologize. It should be dead silent in here. But you're right. I do feel some guilt because if she wasn't crying, it would have been a different thing, but she was
right,
sobbing her eyes out listening to this song. Did I realize? No, it was dark out. I mean, come on now. What are we doing?
Yeah. Now, give me like an age range. Like, she was an adult crying?
She was a teacher. She was a teacher.
Oh.
Yeah, I had a conversation with all them before.
Oh.
You know, Luke, that's my thing at concerts. Like, I'll go, I introduce myself to uh-huh. everybody that I'm kind of around, you know, so they get the feel of me. Like,
yeah.
Hey, I might be, you know, I'm going to be out there tonight. I'm going to be ready to go. I hope you guys are ready to go as well. And, I introduce myself to them. They're all teachers. didn't have the same energy levels as me or the folks behind me who were having a great time. So yeah, she was a teacher. I don't know the age, but I assume mid-20s.
Yeah, okay. Well, I didn't know if she was like, you know, like a teenage girl that
I would have felt a lot worse. Yeah, and probably wouldn't have said what I said, you know, if it was a teenage girl.
Yeah, she's
like,
an
no
adult.
Way.
Yeah, she was an adult. Regardless of age, doesn't matter at that point. She's an adult.
Yeah, be an adult.
So I see both sides of it. I get it. Like if I go to a movie, if I go to a con, right, you don't want somebody else taken away from the experience because they're talking. At the same time, I've been to plenty of concerts. People have talked around. I never had the experience that, I don't know, they were being so loud it took away from the music. But I'd also say that in this case, in particular, also they were kind of in the cheap seats. So, you know, all due respect, you kind of get what you pay for. If the Lumineers were so important that they bring you to tears over a song, and I really wish I knew what song. None of those songs would brought a tear to my eye.
There's about half the people in the section sitting down. And so I was standing up, you know, maybe that was the difference. Like, you know, her friends were sitting down, and because none of them looked at me, she just turned around and let me know that I was being incredibly inconsiderate for her favorite song.
Yeah, you probably were. You're probably being a real jerk.
Yeah, you know, maybe. I don't know, Luke. I don't know.
There was a couple. I could probably pinpoint certain parts of the show where it may have happened.
Later on in the program. Very late on in the program.
Yeah, it was like a roller coaster. They really came out, the Lumineers, and hit it hard. First five, six songs were fantastic. Then we had a little bit of a lull. Then we had a little bit of a pick-me-up again. Then a little more of a lull, playing some of their new stuff. It's like, ah, geez, what's this song? Everyone sat down. That's when people went to go get their refills. It was a little bit of an up and down. Overall, though, it was a good show. I don't want to take anything away. Lumineers were good. I think it was definitely more of a, like a female crowd.
Yeah. Right,
would you say? Yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely. There Lumineers. Was a lot of, you know, like you're on a date with somebody. That's what was kind of happening.
Yeah, I'm not ashamed to say I'm a Lumineers fan. I didn't realize they were such like a female band, I guess, with their fans. But we were rocking it out Saturday night. It was a good time. Lumineers in camp. And 2 weeks from now, maybe we'll be spending all afternoon talking about our experience with Dave Matthews. So stay tuned for that. We'll see. Maybe we'll meet you out there. We'll yell in your face during your favorite Dave Matthews song. You can book Trent to come to your favorite concert and yell in your ear all night through your favorite songs.
I didn't want to put this out to the world because now people are like, oh, Trent is the worst to go to concerts with. You know, I might be, but I wasn't in the correct state of mind, Luke, to respond in a proper and professional way like I would in normal, you know, 9 to 5.
Hey, we're open books around here. I always, my mother was like, I wish you weren't so honest or say something. I don't care. I'll tell you my stories about not tipping people. And then get a bunch of blowback. People are upset about my tipping stories. We're an open book. We tell you how it is around here. Anyways, that's a concert. Right? Have some fun. So, with that said, getting back to the NBA playoffs. Look, the NBA playoffs have been real topsy-turvy this year. I don't know if they've been great NBA playoffs. And I think there's a couple of things that factor in on that. There's a couple of reasons. I gave you my theory last week about the three-pointers. Three-pointers are still too inconsistent to solely rely on threes. So you get alternating performances. One night, you're shooting it well from beyond the arc. Another night, you're not. So on and so forth. And so it leads to different outcomes each game. Then you have also, I would say, a lack of star power to the sense that you don't have a LeBron, you don't have a Durant playing right now, not even a Giannis. Of course, you still have Steph Curry. He's not the same Curry as the last couple of years, so even he's been a little inconsistent this postseason. But like Jason Tatum, sorry to keep beating a dead horse. People keep telling me Jason Tatum's a superstar. He was incredibly awful the other night. No superstars are this inconsistent in big games. He had 10 points and like 6 more turnovers and was 3 of 14. He was bad. Pulled himself out with a quasi-injury. Not good. And so when you don't have the quote-unquote superstars, like even Jimmy Butler's been fantastic this postseason. But he's not a LeBron. He's not a Durant. He's not a top 5 player in the world. So when you don't have those superstars, that too leads to a little more inconsistency. Even Luke is great, but he doesn't have the supporting cast around him. So he can go off for his 40, but the other guys are so inconsistent that it doesn't matter. The Mavericks still lose last night. So I think there's part of that, where if you go into a game with a LeBron, or back in the day a Jordan, you knew what you were getting out of them, and they were going to perform, and they were going to have a big night for you. Not necessarily the case with some of these guys teams have been relying on in the playoffs. Still some inconsistencies. I thought a third thing also is bounce back. these are my reasons for why the playoffs maybe has been so inconsistent, so many blowouts, and maybe not as competitive at times. Like a blowback theory. It's like a rubber band theory, right? That these guys are professionals. They're not going to be that poor two games in a row. Or if they play really poorly, they're not going to be embarrassed two games in a row. They'll have that motivation. They'll have that chip on their shoulder for their next game. And so when one team gets blown out one night, they'll be better the next game because, you know, they were just embarrassed. Like the Celtics were embarrassed the other night. I know the final score makes it look closer than it was. That game was over. They were down 20 at the end of the first quarter. Jimmy Butler didn't play in the second half. Like I said, Tatum at one point was so poor, he pulled himself out of the game. They were on their home floor. They lost. They had 20 turnovers. I expect a much better effort tonight by the Celtics. Vegas does too, evidently, because they're favored by about 7 points. But it's that whole the bounce-back theory that, you know, they were so bad one night, they'll be much better the next. It leads to a victory. And vice versa. The other team played really well. They probably won't play as well the next game. And then five things stand out. Number four is have been injuries. Injuries has played a role. And number five is that we have good teams. I don't know if we have great teams. Right? These are good teams. These four teams remaining are all good teams. The Suns were a good team this year. I don't know if any of them were great teams. I don't know if you take this year's NBA champion and compare them to champions of years past, like Jordan's Bulls, like the Warriors, even just a couple years ago. I don't think this Warriors team's as good as that one. Some of LeBron's champions, even the Spurs. Right, they're good teams. They're not like some sort of legendary great team that we're going to be talking about years from now. They're just good teams. And I've heard, you know, the NBA, this playoffs has been compared to the NBA of the 70s before you had Bird against Magic. And in the 70s, you had, like, you know, good players spread throughout the league, maybe not the stars of a Bird or a Magic, and they were on a bunch of different teams. And so you didn't have some sort of superior great team, but you had a bunch of good teams. And it led to some unique champions and, you know, but the NBA also wasn't very popular then. Then Bird and Magic came in, and those two competing throughout the 80s, every championship was what really helped save the league. So when I look at this NBA postseason, look, I'm into it because I'm a basketball guy. But I think just in general, if we're being honest here, I don't know if it's been a great postseason. Those are my five reasons why. Too reliant on threes. Don't have the quote-unquote superstars. My whole bounce-back theory of when teams are inconsistent on the three-pointer, they get embarrassed. Right? They're going to make sure they come back better the next night. Injuries always play a role, and then we have good teams, not great teams, which takes me to the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors are up 3-0. They're going to the NBA Finals. No team has ever blown a 3-0 lead, and this is not going to be the first. The Mavericks just don't have the support system around Luka Doncic, unfortunately for them. Golden State's going back to the Finals. And so this will be the sixth time in the last 8 years. When we talk about dynasties in the NBA, this is certainly the best one since the Bulls of the 90s, and this is one of the best we've had in the last 50 to 60 years. The Lakers of the 80s made it to the NBA Finals in 7 of 8 years. Jordan's Bulls went 6 of 8. The Warriors are about to go 6 of 8. And then you also have Bird's Celtics of the 80s went 5 of 8. But the difference when you want to compare them was that the Lakers and the Celtics were very early on in Bird and Magic's careers. Jordan was later on in his career. And for the Warriors, this last portion is later on in their career as well. After the injuries, after they've been banged up, they've gone through the changes on the roster with the role players, makes it even more impressive. It's not just the same group. I mean, the core is the same. You still have Curry, Clay, Draymond. But they've had to shuffle some of the other pieces like Jordan did with the Bulls in the 90s. Right? Banged up, missing time due to injuries, age, and they're still going out there. And in the words of David Byrne, same as it ever was. Heading back to an NBA championship, we believe. Steph Curry's 34 years old. Magic Johnson was retired by the time he was 34. Jordan retired after his 34 season. Larry Bird retired after his 34-year-old season. They both retired when they were 35, Jordan and Bird. Magic was already out of the league. Steph Curry's 34, and he's about to lead this team back to another NBA Finals, which also makes it more impressive. I compared it earlier to the TV I grew up with in the living room of our home. It was the same TV my parents bought when they built the house we grew up with 40 years ago. And it was the only TV I knew until I moved out of the house. And it was the big box TV from the 80s. And the older it got, the image kind of stretched out, right? It cut off like the borders. The screen kept stretching out a little bit. But it got the job done. And while we were all looking at the new flashy TVs, I go over to a friend's house and they had a new flat screen. I thought, wow, this is really cool. And they could push it into the wall like Michael Scott and save a couple of inches. And I thought, like, this is really great. But those TVs, I've gone through some TVs myself. I've had a lot of TVs over the years. They just crap out on you. Something breaks. They don't last. Whereas that TV we had in our living room growing up stood the test of time. My father got like 40 years out of that TV and got rid of it finally just to upgrade, not because it stopped working. It was amazing. A huge, bulky TV, like, built into the wall. You weren't moving that thing from the 80s, and it got the job done. And for the Warriors, you know, like, we get distracted by the new flashy stuff that maybe isn't as good as they always say. They don't make them like they used to. And you watch Luka and how good he is, but the rest of the team, they can't compete. The supporting cast isn't good enough. And you watch, like, even the Celtics and Jason Tatum, he's just too inconsistent. And the Nuggets, right, don't have enough help around Jokic. And this team and that team, you're distracted by the youthful. Ja Morant, oh, what a fun player, but he's not ready yet to compete for a title. And yet here's the Warriors, that old 40-year-old box TV that's still getting the job done, that you forgot about or you don't think about. It's over in the corner of the room. You don't give it much thought. Looks kind of ugly, old, out of place. Thinking, like, we really need to replace that. And looking to replace the Warriors in the NBA, thinking, like, these are the new stars of the league. And yet here we are once again with Golden State again getting back to the NBA Finals, led by 34-year-old Steph Curry. Now, as they say, right, they don't make them like they used to. That dynasty is still rolling, and it's the best we've had, certainly since at least Jordan of the 90s. Now, the other series is the Heat and the Celtics. As I mentioned, the Heat won the other night. That was embarrassing for Boston. At home, they get run out of the gym in the first quarter. Jason Tatum was horrendous. 3 out of 14 shooting, 10 points, 6 turnovers. So, look, I'm sorry. It may sound like I'm a Jason Tatum hater. We just keep it real around here. I got people keep telling me he's a superstar. That's not a superstar performance, and it's not the first time it's happened. Tatum has been wildly inconsistent, turns the ball over way too much. When he's not scoring, he's not impacting the game. I think Jason Tatum, he has the potential. We saw that in Game 6 against Milwaukee, but he still has a ways to go. Now, Game 4 tonight, Boston's at home. You got to win this one. Can't fall behind 3-1 going back to Miami. Here is Jalen Rose this morning on what he needs to see from Jason Tatum tonight.
Aggression. And also, good morning, gentlemen. And stop crying to the refs. I saw it at the beginning of the game. The one thing about being in the arena, you can see all access. And the one thing I saw early from Tatum, he was looking back for calls. And you got to play through the physicality, in particular in the playoffs, especially of the Miami Heat, who just got waxed on their home floor, and they came back with a level of physicality that needed to be matched. But this is the thing I want to make sure I also point out for Tatum and Brown. Too many turnovers. It's one thing to have 23 turnovers. It's a killer for your team when the other squad snatches 19 steals. How about the fact that the Miami Heat hands were so active, getting steals, getting deflections? Victor Oladipo, in a short period of time, had 4 steals. Now, all of a sudden, if you're the Heat, you're getting out of transition, you're getting open layups, you're getting open floor opportunities, and this is something that the Celtics just couldn't overcome after they already were down 26 points in the first half.
Jalen Rose on Tatum and the Celtics the other night. I think Boston bounces back and evens the series tonight. Don't know about the point spread, though. I will say this. A little betting tip, I suppose. Of the 36 playoff games, or at least the last 36, only 6 of them have been decided by, I think it's fewer than 5 points. So point being, if you think a team's going to win, we have had very few 2-possession games. So if you think a team's going to win, you might as well take them to win by at least 5, because that's what all the winners have been doing, like last night with the Warriors. So the Celtics tonight are favored by, what is it, about 6.5?
6, yeah, right.
Six?
Now, 6,
all right, so they're right on that number. So that's not much help. Well, you know, you still take your chances. Most teams have been winning by more than 5. So if you think the Celtics are going to win tonight, you probably might as well just take them, because most of these wins have been blowouts. And if the underdog wins, usually they win by even more than 5. So whichever team you think is going to win, usually count on them to win by more than 5. The Warriors did last night. The Heat did the other night. So on and so forth. I think the Celtics win tonight, even up the series. They better. The Heat are banged up right now, and the Celtics need this game. But for Miami, that win the other night, look, Jimmy Butler did not play in the second half. He had only 8 points. The other 4 starters all scored double digits. They all stepped up. We talked about it last hour, but Bam was big with 31. That's what you wanted to see from somebody from Miami throughout this series. And maybe it goes back to that whole Heat culture type of deal where these other guys were ready to go, step up. The Heat have one of the deeper teams in this playoff field. That's why a lot of people like them. And boy, did that play a big role the other night. But speaking of this Heat culture, Jermaine O'Neal, South Carolina's own, was on a podcast the other day. And he's a former member of the Miami Heat going way back. This was a great little anecdote from Jermaine, who was with the Heat just before they brought in LeBron. And as he explains in this clip, he even knew LeBron James was coming to Miami, and yet it still wasn't worth it to keep him around because of one particular reason. Here was Jermaine O'Neal explaining why he left Miami way back in 2010.
Listen, I'm going to be honest. Pat, I'm going to start with Miami. They wanted me to re-sign. Like, I knew LeBron and him was coming. And this is the realest thing I could tell y'all. You know, they got that 8% body fat. Big guy.
Yeah.
That's heavy lifting.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going into the pantry at night, looking at the Oreos looking at me. Right? And I could, bruh, I am in a full battle daily on what I ate. And I was like, bruh, I'm 30 plus years old. I can't go through this. So I was like, bruh, look, I'm too old to be having a debate whether I want to have an Oreo or not. Right? So that's why I left Miami.
Jermaine O'Neal, I love it. He knows LeBron's coming. They're probably going to win a few championships. Miami wanted him back, but he said, you know what? At this point in my life, he was 32 at the time. I'm 32. If I want to have an Oreo, I want to be able to have an Oreo and not have to worry about having my body fat below 8%. Pat Riley runs a real tight ship there in Miami. I love this idea. So he left. He went to Boston and did not win. And look, at that point in his career, he wasn't the same guy either. But Jermaine O'Neal choosing, I interpret it as he chose, like, hey, I'd rather be able to have an Oreo when I want than play here and try to win championships with LeBron James. Trent, what would be your weakness? You open up that pantry, as he said, the Oreos were looking back at him. Hard to turn down, and I love a good Oreo. Is there anything that a snack that you can think of that, when it's in the cabinet, it is hard to pass up?
I don't get them often just because of this reason, Luke, but if I ever see any Lay's honey barbecue chips, ooh, I will devour the bag, whether it's a family size, whether it's a small little travel kit, I will devour that bag in 10 minutes or less, Luke, 10 minutes. So I just don't bring them in the house because I know they're filled with sodium, a lot of sugars in there, salts, things of that nature, just not good for the body. Body's a temple, right, Luke? And I'm sure Jermaine O'Neal, obviously I loved him when he was with the Miami Heat. We appreciate everything he did for the organization. But you get to that point in life where it's like, I want to enjoy an Oreo and dunk it in some, you know, maybe almond milk to keep the cows down at night. But sometimes you just can't risk it. Luke, what would be yours? What would be the thing that you looked at? You're a big chocolate guy.
I am.
Would it be like, all right, you know, you got some Snickers in the fridge or in the pantry, and you got to eat them. Would that be the one?
No, for me, I mean, any chocolate, absolutely. I have no Sebastian Maniscalco is an Italian comedian, and he always talks about that. Italians, he said, I forget how he phrases it, but like whenever you open something, now it's just open. There's no closing it. Like you open a bag of chips, there's no reseal. You just have to eat the bag of chips. That's how it works. I'm the same way. Like I have no self-control when it comes to snacks. I have self-control really in everything else in life. But when it comes to snacking, not even just eating, just snacking, for me, it's Big Cheez-Its.
Ooh.
I love Big Cheez-Its.
Oh, yeah.
And whenever I go to the store, I really have to use self-control not to go to the aisle and buy Big Cheez-Its. But every once in a while, I'll indulge, and those are gone within 24 hours. I'll eat a whole box of Big Cheez-Its in one sitting.
Oh, yeah, you're watching a game or something. Oh. That's the tough thing. When you're watching sports late night, especially these basketball games, like I opened a thing of Smart Food Popcorn.
Oh, so good.
Oh, that thing was gone by halftime. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Let me name drop. I know the inventor of Smart Food.
Did you? What?
Yeah, I grew up with his nephew.
Wow.
Yeah.
They're doing well.
Oh, yeah. So I don't want to tell someone else's personal business. He's one of my best buddies. I just saw him a couple weeks ago. He grew up in a big family, a bunch of sons, right? So his father and then all the uncles. They went off, the uncles, and all did big things. One of them created Smart Food. He's doing okay. This kid's father turned down the opportunity for not only Smart Food, but like a lot of the other investments.
Oh.
He went on and did his own thing. And props, he just retired. I think he's like, you know, he's like 60. So, he's doing well for himself. But he had a grind. He owned like a farmer market. And he's worked hard for all those years. Now he's at a point where he can retire. But all his brothers, so like growing up, just being a friend of the family, like one of the brothers, one of the uncles lived on the golf course where they have the Travelers Championship. The PGA Tour comes into town. He lives on the course. We would go over there and watch it from his balcony because he was on, like, the 11th fairway.
Oh, wow.
You know, like, they were brothers that had, like, houses in Florida. They had houses and other – and, you know, and then my one buddy, his father, you know, we lived in suburban Connecticut, and they, you know, they had a good upbringing and everything. But
you had to make an honest living.
Yeah, right. And he's like, oh, yeah, my brother invented smart food, and my other brother did this, and my brother did. And it was just like, oh, man, poor guy. Now, he's done okay for himself, but he had to work a lot harder than his brothers.
Mm.
So anyways, yeah, smart food's delicious.
Oh, yeah.
Big Cheez-Its for me. And then any chocolate, really, like Oreos. Seinfeld always does the bit. You went for one cookie, you end up eating a whole sleeve. Like, I can't stop myself. If there's Oreos, Chips Ahoy, like, oh, I'm taking down half the pack.
And I can't imagine being a 6'10" center that's, you know, 295 pounds that's trying to have 8% body fat.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Like, that's crazy.
Hey, that's how the Heat, keep getting back to the conference finals all these years.
Heat culture.
Yeah, they're very demanding there. I don't blame Jermaine. I'm thinking, yeah, you know, I'm going to go somewhere else and be able to eat what I want and not have to worry about my 8% body fat. Now, again, to name drop once again. I did meet Jermaine O'Neal way back when. Really nice guy. So, good on you. Go get those Oreos.
He was a good role player. Good role player.
And he was a star early on. And then, yeah, by that point in his career with the Heat, the Celtics, yeah, he was just a role player second half of his career. But South Carolina's own. Can't blame him. Want an Oreo? You should be able to go have an Oreo. 8% body fat. They have these scales nowadays. I don't know how they do it, but you step on a scale and it tells you, like, what percentage is water weight, the fat percentage. I don't know how these scales figure that out just by you standing on it, but those are pretty cool. I would love to see. I haven't done it in years, what my body fat is. I don't think I'm under 8%.
Yeah, and they do, like, you can get tested, and they'll run, like, they just, like, do one, like, finger prick or something, and they can figure out, like, body fat, yeah, water weight, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but they got scales now. You just step on the scale, it tells you. I don't know how the scale knows. I don't know if it's accurate, but anyways. Jermaine O'Neal had to leave the Heat because he couldn't resist the Oreos, and I don't blame him. When we come back, the quarterbacks that have the most to prove when it comes to the NFL this year. The Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Which quarterbacks have the most to prove this year in the NFL? Tomorrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We've been talking throughout the afternoon about our experiences Saturday night with the Lumineers. Somebody asked if you missed it earlier, Trent was talking too loud at one point during the concert, maybe ticked off a huge Lumineer fan sitting in front of him. Somebody asked, they said this could have been your end. Did you offer to buy her dinner?
I thought about it, but I was kind of more focused on the person I was chatting with at the time rather than the kind teachers in front of me. Great folks, by the way, if they're listening. You guys are beautiful people, and I sincerely apologize.
They're listening, thinking, wait a minute, that was the jerk sitting behind us the other night. You could have been like Kevin Durant, who would bring multiple women on the same date.
Ooh, yeah.
In case it didn't work out with one of them, he had a plan B right there at the table with them.
The problem with Kevin Durant, though, he just sat everybody next to each other.
Yeah.
Like, he just bought three seats for Brooklyn, and they were all sitting next to each other. And they kind of were like, who are you here for? Wait a minute.
Yeah. It had to be accepted and known. And Durant, he would go on dates out to – he would even tell him, like, hey, if this doesn't work out – if this isn't going anywhere with us, this girl over here is going to be the one I hang out with. It's like, okay, sounds good. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. We'll get to the quarterbacks in just a moment, but first let's go to the phones. Jack is with us. Jack, what's going on? How are you?
Not much, Luke. How are you, buddy?
Doing well. What's up?
Hey, I was thinking about the concerts. I'm glad you guys transitioned back to that real quick. I've got two concerts coming up on a Tuesday and Wednesday, and I was wondering if Luke is for hire. Oh, sorry, it's a Trent is for hire for concert crashers.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you just email me, TrentCordell01.
No, I see both. I go to a lot of concerts. I see both sides to that. You know, sometimes you have folks that maybe that song, you know, was a song between dad and daughter that, you know, dad passed away. I mean, it goes both ways. But if you say, ask somebody to be quiet, you never know what kind of response you're going to get, you know?
Yeah, certainly. That's why I didn't say I didn't make fun of the person earlier because I had that same thought. You don't know what sort of connection somebody may have with a song or with a band and what it may mean to them. So I understand. That's why I never made fun of the person for crying, right? So you have to be respectful, I guess, to those around you. But like you said, I see both sides as well. I don't know. It's a tough debate, yep, and a tough issue.
Yeah, man. Well, you guys do a great job. Keep up the good work, all right?
I appreciate that. Appreciate the kind words. And if you actually are going to concerts this week, Jack, have a good time. And Trent comes at a low rate. Don't worry. Yeah, that's why I refrain from making fun of the woman crying at a concert, right? You hear that and you think, like, wow, maybe it's something you can mock. But you never know the connection they have or the draw with a certain song or a band, which certainly makes Trent look worse right now. But that's why I would never make fun of the person for crying at a concert. You never know. There could be some sort of connection with a loved one that they lost. Maybe that was their favorite song. Who knows? And here's Trent blabbering behind them, ruining someone's whole night.
Ruining their entire existence,
that's
it
right.
seems like.
This poor woman had to call out sick today because she still is upset over what happened Saturday during her favorite song because of the guy that works in the Morrow Midday Show. Unbelievable. Hey, what quarterbacks have the most to prove in the NFL this year? Let's go division by division and run through this thing real quick. In the AFC East, I think it's clearly Tua, because he's fighting for his job, right? Josh Allen's safe, Mac Jones, even Zach Wilson has some time. In the AFC North, this is an interesting one to me. You can make the case for almost every quarterback. Burrow, I don't think, has anything to prove at this point. I mean, maybe you'd say he has to follow up what he did last year to show that that wasn't a one-off. That's just now him. But that's very little pressure compared to the other quarterbacks. Trubisky and Pickett in Pittsburgh are both trying to prove themselves and keep a job. In Baltimore, Lamar Jackson is going into his free agent year. So he's trying to prove himself to kind of get a big deal. But I actually think the quarterback that has to prove himself the most is Deshaun Watson, because he's brought into Cleveland to be the guy that gets them that Super Bowl. That's why they're making this move. Plus, for Deshaun, obviously, with the things going on off the field, the way he was forcing his way out of Houston anyways, you know, like, he's got to – I think it's why he took his teammates to the Bahamas the last couple days. You got to, you know, win these guys over. You're in a new locker room. Your reputation's taken a little bit of a hit the last year and a half. And for Deshaun, he's going to have to play well when he's out there for Cleveland. They have dreams of winning the Super Bowl, and they think he's the guy to do it. And when he was in Houston, he was not playing with as high as expectations or as good of a supporting cast. But, you know, Deshaun didn't get Houston maybe where they wanted to go. He still has to prove himself to be a big-time winner at the NFL level. I think Deshaun is the most to prove in that division. In the AFC South, maybe Tannehill fighting for his job. Matt Ryan, maybe that he's still got something left. I think the most to prove, though, is Trevor Lawrence. Right? He had such a bad first year. Now, I'm willing to write it off because he was a rookie, and he was on a bad Jacksonville team, and they gave him a head coach who was in over his head. But now, year number two, they went out and spent a lot of money on the offense, and you get Doug Peterson, who's won a Super Bowl before and was an NFL quarterback. Trevor Lawrence has to show me something. I'm not telling you he's got to be a Pro Bowler this year. But like the other young quarterbacks, year two, it's like what they say about kids in college, right? The best thing about a freshman is he becomes a sophomore. Same idea, rookie quarterbacks. Year two, can you show me that improvement, that growth? Can you show me that there is something here? It's not Trevor's fault, but he's been compared to Elway and Peyton Manning and the all-time greats before he ever took a snap in the NFL. Now, that's not his fault, but unfortunately, that's the bar that was set and the expectations he's being held to. So Trevor's got to do something here this year. In the AFC West, the quarterback that has to prove himself the most, you could choose just about anybody other than Patrick Mahomes. Russell Wilson's similar to a Deshaun Watson. He's being brought in to be that savior, to get the Broncos over that hump and to a Super Bowl. And I've always been a big Russell Wilson defender, and I think he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. But last year, he was lousy. And I'll bring up the point again that all of his offensive coordinators, they have not gone on to bigger jobs. They have been fired in Seattle. So I think there are still some questions about Russell Wilson, you know, being that difference maker, that he's the missing link. When the Seahawks won the Super Bowl, they were still had the Legion of Boom. Can he do it in Denver, where he's got to kind of put the team on his back a little bit and carry them to a Super Bowl? I'm not so sure. And I'm a big Russell Wilson guy, but he still has to prove that to me. Carr has to prove himself in Las Vegas, but I think the biggest one is Justin Herbert. Hasn't been to the playoffs yet. And he's looked really good early on. And I say yet, right? He's only been in the league a couple of years. But when you have Joe Burrow from the same draft class going to the Super Bowl last year, and Herbert hasn't even made it to the playoffs with a better team, I mean, on paper, the Chargers have one of the best rosters in football. We're just asking you to get to the playoffs. They had a chance last year, Week 18, lost to the Raiders. I think Herbert has the most to prove in that division. In the NFC East, it's Jalen Hurts for the Eagles because he's trying to save his job. In the NFC North, this one's interesting. Kirk Cousins is always trying to prove himself. Justin Fields is like a Trevor Lawrence in that he's trying to prove he belongs and he's the right guy for the job and he's got to show something in year two. Maybe it's still Aaron Rodgers. Now, this kind of goes to the Dabo Sweeney conversation that it's not so much they have to, like, prove themselves, right? You shouldn't be doubting Dabo at this point. Like, he has nothing to prove. He's won multiple national championships at Clemson. He's built them up. Aaron Rodgers, like, you know, we know he's one of the most talented quarterbacks we've probably ever seen. But you have to show that you're capable of certain things still. For Dabo, the big question is, you know, like, can he still win this year without Brent Venables? That's the big question to answer. And for Aaron Rodgers, I mean, we're still waiting for him to try to go win just another Super Bowl regardless for the first time in the last decade. And now you have to do it without Devontae Adams and not a huge name on offense. So it's not that Rodgers has to prove himself like he belongs or is he really a good quarterback. We know he's a good quarterback. But the pressure's on him like, okay, Devontae's gone. You guys lost in your first playoff game last year at home to San Francisco. There's still something that needs to be done. There's unfinished business in Green Bay, and it lands at the feet of the quarterback. In the NFC South, outside of Brady, you can make the case all the quarterbacks have something to prove. And they do. Sam Darnold, Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston, they're all trying to play for their jobs. But I would say Jameis Winston's number one on the list because, let's be realistic, Darnold, Mariota, they're not the long-term solutions. Those are two teams that probably aren't going to be that competitive this year. But the Saints, you know, they still have goals of being a playoff team this year. And Winston played pretty well last year when healthy. And he's a former number one pick. And if things work out, maybe he could be their next long-term answer and be the replacement for Drew Brees. So I think for Winston, he has the most pressure because he probably has the highest expectations. For Sam Darnold and the Panthers, like, you know, we expect them to only win 5 or 6 games and replace the quarterback anyways. Same with the Falcons. The Saints, they believe they could still be a playoff team, and Winston maybe believes, yeah, I could be the guy. And in the NFC West, you can make a strong case for Garoppolo, who's still playing for his job seemingly every year in San Francisco. I think it's Kyler Murray, though. Kyler Murray threw that temper tantrum in the offseason. And so when you make more noise, you just create more pressure on you. I think it's part of the issue with Baker Mayfield right now. Like when you're a little arrogant, a little cocky, confident, you're out there doing commercials, I think you just increase the expectations of yourself. So for Kyler, right, when you're going to demand a new contract and you're going to scrub your social media and you're going to go through that whole ordeal, it's like, okay, well, you better come out here and play really well. Right? You believe you should get paid more. Go prove yourself. And he has not won a playoff game in his 3 years, and they were embarrassed in the playoffs last year, and they've always been worse the second half of the season compared to the first. So I think Kyler Murray certainly has the most to prove. The quarterbacks in each division with the most to prove this year. Now, when it comes to Deshaun Watson, HBO, Real Sports, is their episode this week is in part about Deshaun Watson, and they're going to speak, or they already have, because it's taped, they've interviewed a couple of the accusers of Deshaun Watson. So if you're a subscriber to HBO, you can watch that tomorrow night. And we'll see if anything of interest comes from it. Here's what stands out to me when it comes to Deshaun Watson, and it's not all that serious and has nothing to do with the legal situation. He, as I mentioned, brought his offense to the Bahamas or Bermuda, wherever, I think the Bahamas, to go train these for the last week. Right? Nice team-building exercise, and he wins over the locker room. Here's my issue, and it's not even so much about Deshaun. It's a problem throughout social media and all of us in general. I complain about certain things that I think, and I'm no wordsmith, but I think there are certain things that we screw up in our language. I've always said, and this is I'm in the minority. This is one that's special to me. The expression "play it by ear" should be "play it by ear." That's a whole nother conversation and debate that I've been having for years. But I also think, as we talked about in the show about a week or two ago, I think we use the word humble incorrectly. I think we use it the opposite of what we intend. Right? When people win an award and say, "I'm really humbled," I don't think that's what they mean by that. I think another H word, honored, would probably fit better than humbled. And here's another one, because I saw Deshaun Watson said this in his post, and I see people make this mistake all the time. At the end of his post with his teammates on the tropical island, Deshaun Watson said, "Blessed to be a part of the dog pound. problem was he put apart one word, as if you're saying the opposite of what you mean to say. What people really want to say is a space part. Blessed to be a part of the dog pound. Not a part. That means like you're separate. You're separated. You're not part of the dog pound. And this is not to pile on to Sean, because I see people do this all the time. Every day I see this mistake made on social media. And it drives me. It's a pet peeve of mine. And again, I'm no wordsmith, but even I know the difference. So for those out there that are misusing the wrong word, make sure there's a space there. It's a part. I am blessed to be a part of the dog pound. Don't put that. Don't combine those two. Not to be a part. Like when you're a part in a relationship, you're a part from your wife or husband, right? You're not together. You don't say, I'm blessed to be a part. If so, then call the divorce attorney. I am blessed to be a part of this, of my significant other right now. You're saying the opposite of what you mean. So another pet peeve, as I rant for a few moments here. Certain things that we all screw up, and I'm guilty of certain things as well in the English language. But that's another one I see all the time. Put a space in there. A part instead of a part. Anyways, when we come back, a 95-year-old is trying to help fix the NFL. Maybe he has a good idea. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
A 95-year-old trying to help fix the NFL. It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Great song. Vicky Betts wrote it about his girlfriend named Blue Sky, hence the name of the song. A 95-year-old, Bud Grant. I love Bud Grant. I'm a Vikings fan. Bud Grant is one of the greatest coaches in NFL history. Helped lead the Vikings to all those Super Bowls, even though they couldn't get it done. As much as I do love Bud Grant, we got to be fair here. And his teams were seemingly never prepared for the Super Bowl, and he got out-coached in a bunch of Super Bowls, and they never won. But just the fact that he kept getting there. Right, Bud Grant was a great CFL coach, then came to Minnesota and did wonders with the Vikings. He's 95 years old, still lives in the area, has an office in the facility with the Vikings. And there was a game a couple years ago, and the Vikings were in the playoffs against Seattle, when they were playing outdoors at the time, and it was negative degrees, and Bud Grant went out for the coin toss as a 90-year-old in a short-sleeve T-shirt. And it was awesome. And the place was going wild, and it was great. So Bud Grant has come out, and he says, the NFL needs to toughen up. I love it from this guy. Old school. By the way, he never allowed heaters on the side. The Vikings used to play outdoors back then when he was the head coach, and he never allowed heaters on the sideline. So you want to talk about someone who's tough, right? Bud Grant. There's only so many people who could tell a certain group or certain group of people to toughen up. Bud Grant could tell whoever he wants to toughen up. This dude's tough as nails, still at 95. Here are his ideas for the NFL, and I got to be honest, one of them I think I really like. He wants to get rid of a fair catch. Now, he worked in the CFL, and there is no fair catch in the CFL. You have to give like a 5-yard cushion, but there's no fair catch. He wants to get rid of the fair catch. That one, I don't know if I am so fond of. He also wants to get rid of touchbacks on kickoffs as well, which also I may not be so fond of, because they have done studies that have found kickoffs are the most dangerous play in football, and we know the NFL is trying to limit the injuries, hence why the touchback rule, they have extended where the touchback gives you field position. That's why we have the fair catch. So those ideas, I don't know if I'm so into those ideas from Bud Grant. I think we should still keep the fair catch. Keep the touchback on the kickoff. But this last idea, I think I'm in when it comes to Bud Grant. He wants to get rid of kneel downs at the end of an NFL game. Now, remember, if you're an old school football fan, I'm preaching to the choir, you know that kneel downs really aren't all that old. It started when Larry Zonka, the miracle at the Meadowlands, Larry Zonka fumbled and Herm Edwards returned it, and then teams realized, like, wow, this probably isn't smart to continue to run plays and potentially fumble at the end of games. So when Bud Grant was coaching, like, they wouldn't kneel on the football. They would just run out the game. Nobody thought of doing such a thing. The kneel down is relatively new, in the football world. Now, look, that was like still, what, the late 70s probably? The miracle of the Meadowlands? But still, all right, it's relatively new. Newer than the forward pass. But Bud Grant's idea is, if you kneel it at the end of the game, it stops the clock. The clock only runs if you pick up yardage. I think I love this idea. Imagine at the end of a game, right, if a team's out of timeouts, it gives you more of a chance. But it also adds drama. How often are you watching a game and the last 2.5 minutes they're just kneeling out the clock and you think, ah, game's over. Nothing we can do about it. It's done with. Wouldn't you love the idea that they have to run a play and if they don't gain a yard, it stops the clock, essentially giving you an extra timeout? Talk about drama. Now instead of watching Tom Brady kneel it for 3 times, even if it's just a quarterback sneak, like you're watching, they're like, oh boy, they better advance it. They better get a yard. Otherwise, the clock's going to stop. The other team may get the football back. I think we should keep the fair catch. Keep the touchback, but Bud Grant may be onto something with this idea that at the end of the game, call it whatever, final 2 minutes, maybe the final 3 minutes. I'd probably go final two. Right, final 2 minutes, if the team does not advance the football on the play, it stops the clock until they snap it next. And that removes kneel downs and adds more drama to the end of the game. Now you could tell me, hey, that team, they should have done better with their timeouts or they shouldn't be trailing. Why are we giving another advantage? But I just love the idea of the drama. Handing it off and trying to run for a yard or the quarterback sneak, and you better pick up a yard. Otherwise, that other team may get the football back. And we love offense, right? And we want to see more points, and we want to see the quarterback with the ball in their hands at the end of the game. That's why we changed the overtime rules. I saw this idea from Bud Grant. I thought, the other ones, I don't know about. I think it's important to keep the fair catch, keep the touchback. I don't think that makes the NFL soft nowadays. I think it makes them maybe smart. But that rule about getting rid of kneel downs by stopping the clock, Bud Grant may have a home run right there. We'll wrap up your Monday, hour three. We'll wrap up your Monday when we come back. Tomorrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Wrapping up your Monday in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget, you can take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Just simply stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com or through TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, or a free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store, and there you can listen to the show live or on demand from anywhere in the world. Appreciate listeners checking in from at least 8 different states and multiple countries on this Monday. If you missed anything from the show, catch it on demand. Tomorrow will be on the air for about half a show. Won't be on the air Wednesday. It's conference tournament week for baseball, so we'll lead right into Gamecocks coverage tomorrow. Hey, today, by the way, before we go real quick, they just removed the last payphone booth from New York City today. The payphone was invented in 1889. That seems crazy to me. The first payphone was installed by William Gray in 1889. William Gray also invented the catcher's chest protector that you see in baseball, and then he sold it to Spalding. So how about that? This William Gray invented the phone booth and also the chest protector for catchers in baseball. And friend of the show, Pete Abraham, who covers Major League Baseball, he's traveling somewhere today. He posted a photo of an airport where they took all the phones away from the payphone station, if you will, the bank of phones that they used to have in an airport. Probably long overdue, but for some reason, today, they're taking the payphones away from everywhere in this country. The end of an era. Hey, life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon, leading right into Gamecock baseball. If you ever miss anything on the show, catch it on demand. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.